This show was made at Access Radio Taranaki with help from New Zealand On Air. To find more local content, go to www.accessradiotaranaki.com.
It's time for real stories from those who make our region and our country their home. Time for making yourself at home, thanks to the support from the Ethnic Communities Development Fund. Welcome to the summer edition of Making Yourself at Home, where we look back on the highlights of 2025. Welcome to Making Yourself at Home.
This is Making Yourself at Home, radio show and podcast,
where you can listen to wonderful stories from many migrants in New Zealand and learn from their experience.
Hello, hello. Good morning and welcome to Access Radio Taranaki 104.4 FM, your voice, your choice. We are here in the studio. Alina from Romania, we have today Clarissa with me from Argentina, and we have also our guest Brian from the US. Good morning, everyone. How is everybody today?
Good morning. I'm doing great. Thanks.
Great. Wonderful.
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning. Good morning. And yeah, it's Monday. It's 11 a.m. And usually this time we have our Making Yourself at Home show. And it's a show about people who made New Zealand their home and come from other countries. And I'm so pleased today that we have Brian. He's born and raised in Columbus, Ohio, the U.S., and he is very into competitive athletics while he was growing up. And also, I know that he was moving in New Plymouth in 2021. I'm so much looking forward to listen to your story today, Brian. So welcome.
Thanks. There's plenty to fill in between Columbus, Ohio, and moving to New Plymouth.
Yes, it's a lot of space, and I'm sure we will not have time to cover everything, but at least a little bit for our listeners. You came in New Plymouth in 2021. What brought you to New Zealand, first of all, right?
Yeah, so I was finishing my master's degree while I was at Louisiana State University. And I was at the end of that, and I had some pretty entertaining set plans in place to go from Louisiana towards, and then I guess a bright and shiny object was kind of presented, and instead of following through on those plans, I took the opportunity to do a funded PhD project at Massey University in Palmerston North.
Wow, amazing.
That's super interesting. So what was the PhD about?
I was doing research on a novel mitigation strategy to protect Lake Rotorua water quality.
Right. Yeah.
So technically it was in soil science, but it had a lot to do with water-soil interactions.
Yeah. Wow, amazing. And how come you came with this idea? Did you study that before, or is it a passion of yours? Or
my academic background was roughly in environmental science.
Yeah.
So studying the environment and how to monitor things in the environment. And then professionally, I was doing conservation work after my bachelor's degree. And so I'd had an interest in doing research, academic research, for a long time, and it took a while to end up back in the world of academia, but I eventually got there, and the work on protecting Lake Rotorua, or protecting water quality, lake water quality, had been something I'd wanted to do for a very long time, so eventually got there. It took a while. It took a long journey to end up doing really what I was very, very interested in doing.
Oh, wonderful. And I think New Zealand is a perfect place for that, right? Because we have so much protection around water, and the water is so beautiful here, so it's so good that you came to New Zealand.
Yeah, definitely. It was quite refreshing to move to a place where environmental values, and particularly water quality, are so part of the culture and society's consciousness here.
Yeah, wow. Interesting, beautiful. So from water, right? From, you said leak water quality. So when you say leak water, like, is the water who is coming from our
Can you tell us a little bit more? I don't know so many things.
Lake water.
As in Lake Rotorua.
Yeah, lake. Okay, yeah. Wonderful.
Lake water lake. Quality.
Okay.
Yeah. So how does affect to, or how that, yeah, affect to the flora and fauna? Is it like, have you noticed any changes? Is any project you're working on or you've been working on actively in the last years you can share something about probably?
So while living in Taranaki, I started working at the regional council as the land and soil scientist there. And I held that position for a little over a year. And there I was helping to work on policy for the new land and water plan with a focus. My focus was on developing the strategy for sediment. Sedimentation controls, so yeah. Trying to prevent erosion, figuring out how sediments, so soil that's getting into streams and rivers is affecting the ecosystems and water quality.
Right, yeah. Because it's a huge thing, like when you start to develop new houses and new neighborhoods and everything, you normally cut down the trees, and then that creates, when it rains, erosion, and that ended up in rivers and lakes affecting like the natural composition and everything. That's it.
Yes, development certainly has an impact on the amount of sediments that are getting into lake rivers and streams. In Taranaki, because it's a very rural region, it's mostly productivity-based activities like forestry and agriculture that are leading to water quality degradations. And that's linked to nutrients as well as soils that are in sediments that are getting into the water.
Wow, amazing. Wow. Yeah, I didn't know so many things about
super
water.
Technical.
So, yeah, I was quite, it's quite amazing. And I have some friends who are working there, and they always tell me about, you know, the magic of water and how we should take care of our environment and everything. So yeah, I'm so happy to have you today and tell us more about it.
Yeah. So Ryan, what brought you to New Plymouth?
The partner I was seeing got a job in New Plymouth. We arrived pretty much sight unseen. Mm-hmm. We'd been here, we'd done a hike at the national park and came here for a wedding, but really didn't spend any time in town. When we decided to move to New Plymouth, we were actually in the United States, where we spent a year during COVID. So I finished my PhD, moved back to the States during COVID to sort of be close to my parents to make sure they were okay, either for them if they needed me. And then life in the States wasn't exactly what we were looking for, so we decided to move back to New Zealand.
Yeah, because like I bet between the difference between, I never been to the States, but I bet the difference is quite high, isn't it? It's quite different.
It's a very different culture, yes.
Yeah.
And I appreciate the pace of things here in New Zealand a lot more.
Yeah, it's more relaxing, right?
It's much, much more relaxing.
Yeah. Wow. So from U.S. to New Plymouth directly, right?
back to New Zealand.
And when you chose New Plymouth, and because you said your partner had a job, right? What was the thing that attracted you to Taranaki and the area?
It was really strictly the job.
We
came sight unseen. We knew very, very
but
little
after
about
that,
it.
Yeah,
there was something.
I love New Plymouth. For me, it's a very ideal location. The size of it, as well as what it has to offer in terms of arts and culture, the outdoors, the coastline, the beaches, the surf, the mountain, the walkways in town, the Te Anui track, the Huatoki, the parks, Pukekura, the regional parks, all just, it offers
amazing,
so much. And the pace of life here is very, very
easy,
nice.
Right?
It's very easy living.
Yeah.
You can say. And I saw that you are very much into Frisbee, right? So you said that you really like to.
Yeah.
How did you discover the sport?
I'm a big fan of disc golf and very proud member of the disc golf community here in New Plymouth. I started playing disc golf back in 2006 while I was at uni doing my bachelor's degree in North Carolina. I ended up moving off campus to a house that was just a 30-second walk from a disc golf course. Previous to that, I'd never played disc golf.
Yeah.
And just moving that close to a course, it was just something I jumped into. I loved Ultimate Frisbee before playing disc golf, so I had a natural background in throwing round plastic objects. but yeah, something I really just fell in love with immediately when I started playing back then.
Yeah.
And having the disc golf course at Maryland's Domain here.
It's like a wonderful place, right?
It's such a beautiful place. And having a community of people to just open up a social life for somebody that's new to the region without knowing anybody is such a really welcoming thing to come to.
Yeah,
It's a very social sport and very supportive, and it's a great way to meet people and make friends.
Yeah, so obviously you have a lot of gatherings and you meet for Christmas and Easter and have your birthdays and celebration and stuff like that, right?
Certainly with friends I've made at the disc golf course. There are good friends I've made from there.
And I think this is what New Zealand and New Plymouth especially is offering to the people. Like, I remember when I came here and I didn't have any friends, and somebody just introduced me to, you know, to a dance course. You know, like Clarissa is a dancer.
trying,
like a dance course or a Zumba class or, you know, other sports like tennis. And it's amazing, yeah.
There's no shortage of things to do in New Plymouth, either outside or culturally speaking, with arts and things like dance or theater. I'm also in an improv comedy group here in Taranaki. That's how I know Clarissa. That's also a very, very important part of my life here. And that group of people is just an amazing group.
Amazing, yeah.
I think we can dive more into improv and things you like to do after a song. We can maybe play a song.
Yes.
But I just want to say that I just came across the disc golf a week ago.
Yeah.
I didn't know that exists before. Like, it's not common in Argentina at all.
No. Same in Romania.
And I've been to the Maryland's Domain by coincidence. Wasn't like planned anything. And then I was like, what's that? Like...
yeah, something flying in the sky, right? And you don't know what
it is. No, it wasn't anyone playing. It was just the, you know, where you need to throw it to, like the holes.
The basket,
In the basket, yeah. And I was like, whoa, what's this? But yeah.
Yeah. Oh, good.
It was new for me.
We'll have to go playing sometime.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
After I fix my shoulder.
Yes.
Okay, Liz, we have a song here that you said you liked. And it's called Rambling?
Ramblin' Man by Hank Williams Sr.
Wow. Why do you like it?
It's one of the songs that would always play in my dad's car when I was growing up. We'd be driving everywhere for all my sports activities. And there's a lot in terms of the lyrics that I think influenced my future path in life. In terms of just being open to travel and adventure.
Good. Let's listen to the lyrics and to the song.
Enjoy.
I can settle down and be doing just fine. Till I hear an old freight rolling down the line. Then I hurry straight home and pack. And if I didn't go, I believe I'd blow my stack. I love you, baby, but you gotta understand, when the Lord made me, he made a rambling man. Some folks might say that I'm no good, that I wouldn't settle down if I could. But when that old open road starts to call in me. There's something over the hill that I gotta see. Sometimes it's hard, but you gotta understand. When the Lord made me, He made a rambling man. I love to see the towns a-passing by, and to ride these rails neath God's blue sky. Let me travel this land from the mountains to the sea, 'cause that's the life I believe He meant for me. And when I'm gone and at my grave you stand, just say God's called home, you ramblin' man.
Welcome back, everyone. There is another Monday here at Access Radio Taranaki. We are making ourselves at home with Alina, Brian, and myself, Clarissa. So we have Brian this morning with us. He is originally from Ohio in the USA, and he's been in New Zealand from 2016 and in Taranaki from 2021. So Brian at the beginning was telling us about what he does and what brought him here. But we also talk about improv and the things we can do in Taranaki. So I met Brian through the Improv Taranaki group here in Plymouth. And I want to ask Brian something I never asked before, and it's, why did you get into improv the first time?
Improv comedy had been on my radar for some time. Because it seemed like a great skill to develop in terms of social skills and being able to communicate, just shooting from the hip, kind of on the spot. Mm. So the challenge, I'm interested in taking on challenges, and doing improv comedy is certainly a challenge. And after my first class, I identified that as something I really wanted to do and get good at, because I thought it would be very valuable to develop those skills. And yeah, since then I've completely loved the experience and developing my improv skills. I think I got on stage with Improv Salad, I think 6 months after after my first class.
Wow,
so that was quite a moment. Certainly some nerves and fear getting up on stage to do that, but I think I've been on stage 4 or 5 times since then, and it's been fantastic. The group is super supportive. It's a very safe environment to be part of because of the other people just making it so. They're just very safe and supportive group.
And it's super fun to have
so
Brian
fun.
On the stage. Yes. I need to say, super good. So was that the first time doing improv here in Taranaki? Never done that before or anything like that?
It was completely new for me.
Wow.
Yeah, and I have zero performing arts background. So, I grew up playing very competitive sports. So being, on stage on a field and performing had been, part of my upbringing and development. But in terms of creative arts and performing arts, I had absolutely zero experience with. So definitely a new field for growth for me.
And how do you feel? Because, I'm amazed, because I also find improv in my adult life. And I remember the first time I went there, I was feeling like a kid again, like playing like kids. And I love that sensation on my 30s, being like, you don't supposed to keep learning. I mean, you learn the whole life, but I don't know how to explain it. But, you know, it's something you've never done before, completely new. Take the courage and the challenge on board to go and do it. Mm-hmm. How was that?
Like I said, it was exactly what I was looking for. I enjoy new experiences and new challenges and developing new skills. The play was also something I was looking for because, you know, as adults, we don't get enough play. You know, I play disc golf. I do outdoor stuff, which is playful, but kind of social play, which is what improv comedy really entails, is really important.
Yeah.
And really, really satisfying.
It is, right? Improvisation is such a great skill to have, and especially to go on the stage.
Yeah, I didn't know what it was when I started doing it the first time. I didn't know what it was about at all. It's a song somewhere. and for me, was finding myself again and getting back to the young Clarissa,
yeah.
Like my inner child. And it was super challenging, still challenging.
Yes.
But it's a place where you don't, or at least I don't feel any pressure to be whatever is expected me to be. Is that I can just be myself, and I love that.
And I think you have a very nice group there, as I saw on the stage. I mean, I was coming and saw you guys, and it looks like you know each other for a long time, you know, and everybody's so friendly. So I think that makes you feel comfortable, right?
Those connections you see on stage are really the result of us getting together to practice together. As well as, I think, the director Phil's ability to facilitate that openness and support within the group.
Wow.
But as Clarissa was saying, the finding the inner child, so much of becoming good at improv is about removing some filters and restrictions and taking away some of the judgments and just kind of channeling that true inner voice. It comes almost allowing the subconscious to come out and that inner child within us that we all still have, but kind of society kind of keeps us from being able to express.
Culture you were rising as well. Like, I don't know, for me, like, you know, like, I'm an engineer, so I'm super structured and everything, and then I don't have arts background at all, and then facing improv, it was blowing my mind.
Yeah, wow. And it's so brave from you, you know, to take this challenge, because it's not like everybody can just go there and say, okay, I will do it. So, yeah, well done you to do that.
People think it takes a lot of bravery.
It is.
Risk involved, like, what's the worst that can happen? Like, you can say something that doesn't make any sense. No, you know, a lion's not going to eat you because of it. You're not going to fall off a cliff. It's a pretty safe risk to take.
Great.
That's what you said is, like, such a good point, because it's not like we are bribes because we do improv. Like, I mean, we bribe as well, but it's not super, like, you know, climbing a cliff or rowing in a lake on a stream. It's a
life and death is not on the line here.
Yeah, it's not.
And they say, you know, about speaking in public, that it's one of the biggest fear that people have, and it's mainly much bigger than fear of death.
But because we are worried to fuck it up.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
That's the thing. It's like we worry
society
about that.
Pressure, right?
Yeah. And it's like that's I think that's the adult's problem. Mm-hmm. It's like we're too concerned about what other people think about us. They are dealing with their own things, and then we're concerned about making mistakes.
Yeah.
Right. And a lot of the skill development within improv is learning that mistakes are fine. Mistakes yeah. lead to funny situations
exactly
in improv.
Right. Yeah.
So mistakes are almost encouraged within improv. There's constructive mistakes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And tell us, because I was reading your description a little bit, and it says here that after graduation university, you completed a two-year U.S. Peace Corps service in Zambia. And how was that? it's far away from home. And how did you make yourself at home there in Zambia? How were the things there?
So it was quite the challenging experience. So I was 22 when I left the United States to serve in the Peace Corps in Zambia. Just a little background, the U.S. Peace Corps is a government, U.S. government volunteer service.
Yeah.
Completely voluntary. And it's typically a 26 or 27 month contract that you serve with. At the time, I didn't get to choose exactly where I got to go. I knew I wanted to go to Africa, and I knew I wanted to do something involved with fisheries extension work and aquaculture development, mm-hmm. so fish farming, because one of my university advisors, that's what she did. So I had a decent idea of what I wanted to do with the Peace Corps. I ended up going to Zambia, and going there when I was 22 is certainly
thing, right?
a formative experience. Another, risk and challenge that I was interested in taking on. It was by far the best thing I could have done with my life at the time.
Mm.
Not to say that it wasn't extraordinarily challenging, because it was. And, I witnessed a lot of things that people in developed countries don't really see and fully understand. Malaria was extremely prevalent in my village. The water source was, for most people, just a stream going through the village of a furrow, and that's where I got my water from. So I had to treat that with bleach and a filter.
Wow.
And not everybody in the village had those resources, so a lot of health issues arose from drinking water from a stream that was running through a village with animals wandering around and people not always using pit latrines. So water quality and health and hygiene were huge issues. HIV/AIDS was relatively prevalent in my area, so I sort of had to bear witness to the effects of that. So I saw a lot of ugly things, but also life in the village was really a beautiful thing to be a part of.
Yeah.
The people there that I lived around were just absolutely beautiful people, extraordinarily friendly, extraordinarily generous, particularly for being subsistence farmers. Yeah, that's where I got my PhD in life, I like to say.
Yeah.
Wow.
Just learning about the world. I had a lot of freedom to adventure and be my reckless 22, 23, 24-year-old self, traveling around, mountain biking around through the bush and hitchhiking around the country. And it was quite the adventure.
So were you there for 2 years, something like that?
Yeah. So my Peace Corps service was 26 months. The first 2 months were spent in training.
Mm-hmm.
So I had a homestay family where I'd attend class with other volunteers all day. Mm-hmm. Every morning we'd had language training. So I learned to speak Bemba or Ichi Bemba. So Muli Shani for any Zambian listeners out there.
Yeah, I'm sure they are there, yeah.
Yeah. So, and then every afternoon was a technical training. So I was a rural aquaculture promotion volunteer. So I was doing fisheries extension work.
Okay.
So I had a colleague that was based in my area who was a Zambian government fisheries extension officer. So I worked with them to help spread fish farming in the region.
Amazing, yeah, sounds amazing.
Using local technologies, which is just essentially a hoe to dig a big pond with, and plastic cans to transport fish in, fingerlings to stock ponds with, and nets to harvest fish with, and it was quite the experience.
I imagine, and I love fish, you know. So,
so you said that was your PhD in life. Yes. Is there any thing you can share that you learned during the process?
So leaving that experience, I just carried so much confidence. After living in a mud hut with no electricity and no running water for 2 years, I felt like I could do anything. After hitchhiking around for days, if not weeks, when I went traveling, that, you know, after doing that, I felt comfortable and confident doing just about anything and being willing to really challenge myself and put myself in relatively sketchy situations where I felt like I could take on a challenge. So that was just a huge part to carry with me for the rest of my life. And after getting back to the States, I certainly took a atypical path in lifestyle. I worked seasonal jobs for years, just 6 months here, some time off, 6 months there, a few months there, job to job to job. Most of the time, it didn't make sense for me to actually rent a flat or anything, so I just lived out of my car, camped in public lands, which you can do. I was in the desert for most of it, so I didn't even set up a tent most of my nights. I just camped under the stars.
The moon, right?
Wow.
Yeah. Beautiful.
So that was almost 4 years of doing that, which is not what the typical American does with their life in their mid-20s.
But my
Peace Corps experience really gave me the confidence to do something like that. And said, well, if I can live free in Zambia like this and take certain types of risks in the outdoors, I certainly get away with it in the States. So, yeah, that's what I did. And I just gave myself the opportunity to live, work, and play in some of the most beautiful places on the planet. Working in fisheries, doing endangered fish species recovery work on the Upper Colorado River plateau. So I was based in Western Colorado and working on rivers there, rivers in Utah, rivers in New Mexico, and lakes in those places, as well as Arizona, Lake Powell, which are just some of the most stunning landscapes you can imagine, desert landscapes with wildlife around. And we were doing backcountry rafting trips. We're camped out for 10 days at a time, just floating down a river in extremely backcountry places. In the elements, summertime thunderstorms ripping through, and we're, on a raft or camped out with tents up, and we have campsites. So quite the adventurous time then also.
It's amazing.
And yeah, I got to work in Grand Canyon National Park. 1 year I spent 100 days at the bottom of the Grand Canyon off and on. I developed a really deep relationship with such a spectacular and special place. And the type of other people that were working those jobs were really my kind of people. And I got to develop some really special relationships with really special people in the process of doing those things.
Amazing.
Super amazing, right? Like, people cannot see our faces, but we are delighted.
I mean, it's obviously, if you were going through so many things, nothing can scare you now, right? Going through so many situations and
people, people hear the stories of my adventures and they mention the word brave. And I like to say that there's a fine line between bravery and stupidity.
Okay.
Brian.
Quite a fine line.
So you're also a very humble person. Obviously.
I wouldn't say that. I think there's plenty of people in the world that would not agree with that. I am an American.
You're an American.
Which, we carry a certain amount of confidence within us, I believe.
Okay.
Interesting. What a great story. What a great story.
Yeah, and I think that touches back to the first song that was played called Ramblin' Man.
Yeah.
So I was on the road for quite some time. And, you know, who knows what listening to that song so many hundreds of times in my, you know, when I was 6, 7, 8, 9 years old, how that kind of affected my psychology and potentially, you know, opened up this dreamland of travel and adventure. So my mom also worked in libraries while I was growing up, so I spent a lot of time with books, and I've been a lifelong reader. And one of the books I fell in love with in my adolescence and teenage years was On the Road by Jack Kerouac. And I think that really resonated with me about just getting out on the road, the freedom that adventure has to offer.
Yeah.
And living freely without expectations of living up to what society's norms are.
That's
very profound, right? It's like, and also finding that book, I imagine, you know, it's like finding that book in the library and you keep on going and, you know, on the road, being on the road and making yourself at home everywhere you go, obviously, because you found yourself in yourself. So that is a big strength that you have.
Mm. Mm. Strength or...
Yeah, or the other word that you said before, but yeah. Let's look at it as a strength.
I guess.
I think that can.
Yeah, I certainly found my home on the road for a long, long time. It was extremely challenging. Very high highs, very low lows. I was talking to somebody recently, and they asked me if that period of my life I was happy, and there were definitely struggles and definitely questions as to whether I was living the right way. It was because it was so physically demanding. And spending so many nights camped out by myself in the wilderness, it can be quite daunting and very isolating. And after being isolated in a Zambian village for 2 years, it's just happiness. There were certainly glimpses of it, but I think there was a lot of joy.
Yeah.
And there's a difference between happiness and joy. And I think the life style that I was living offered me a lot of joy to experience because there was just such a profound experience involved with it, and satisfaction with you know, challenging myself and presenting myself with these opportunities to experience nature and connect with nature in these beautiful places, and developing a relationship with the weather and what it's like to wake up to frozen water and think, 0 degrees Celsius, like the freezing point isn't actually that cold.
Usually you prepared yourself for bigger things that hopefully they are coming now in your life.
Yeah, we'll see. I'm certainly open to it.
Yes. Oh, this is wonderful. I could listen to your story another 2-3 hours, but we have another song here from you, which is called Express Yourself. And I think this is what you did in the last years, right?
I'm all for people expressing themselves.
Yeah,
Very pro free speech and just generally freedom to feel like you can...
To feel who they are, right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Beautiful.
Okay, let's so we will listen to it.
Enjoy.
Express yourself. Express yourself. You don't never need help from nobody else. Whatever you do, do it good. Whatever you do, Lord,
you look like when you're doing what you're doing. It's what you're doing when you're doing what you look like you're doing. Express yourself. Express yourself. Everybody on the floor now, jumping like a kangaroo. So let the horn do the thing they do, y'all.
Hello, hello again. Here it's Access Radio Taranaki, 104.4 FM, your voice, your choice. We are here in the studio with Alina from Romania, Clarissa from Argentina, and we have here Brian from the US, and he was telling us about all his life stories and going around the world and having so many experiences. And we were very curious in the break about your coming to New Zealand and how was that from a busy life to a very calming and maybe not so busy life in New Zealand. How was that for you?
Well, by the time I got to New Zealand after being on the road and even during my master's degree, the year I spent before getting to New Zealand, it was pretty much every month I did something somebody does maybe once in a year or maybe even once in a lifestyle.
Right.
So I had a hectic year before moving to New Zealand.
Yeah.
I'm happy to talk about some of the examples of the things that I did that year.
Yes, do it.
Yeah, after getting to New Zealand, my student visa wasn't in place yet, so I actually had some time to continue with my adventures before diving into the PhD. I ended up doing a bike tour from north of Lake Rotorua back to Palmerston North on a push bike with all my camping gear. So I'd just ride my bike for somewhere between 70 and 110 kilometers and then hop on a trail and hike into a hut or go camping and then just continue that for a while. It was not a direct route back to Palmerston North from there. Finally started the PhD, and I had to transition from this very time-rich lifestyle to where I had time to adventure and spend significant periods of time outdoors, to being locked into 50 hours a week of work. And that was very, very difficult. That was a difficult transition for me. There's the concept of unlived lives, and I actually did have to go through a grieving period of the death of many unlived lives in terms of my adventurous lifestyle. That it was not easy, on top of all the other stresses of doing the PhD and the amount of work, the workload of doing that. I had to go through this really a grieving process for myself.
Wow. It's quite hard to go through that process and, you know, like you said, grieving other lives. And how did you manage to go through that? Like, how did you find the strength to...
I journaled for about 40 minutes every morning during my PhD. So one of the things I'm, I guess, most proud of from my experience of doing my PhD was prioritizing my own well-being and wellness above successfully completing my PhD, because for me, completing the PhD wasn't worth it if it came at the cost of my mental and physical well-being. So I prioritized those things first. And so prior to the PhD, I developed a meditation practice. So I'd meditate every morning, and then I'd spend 40 minutes just journaling. The only prompt I worked with was, "Where are you?" And I'd just spend 40 minutes every morning answering the question, "Where am I?" as truthfully and honestly and openly as I possibly could.
Well done.
And I'd say I did that 90% of the mornings of that four-year period. Yeah. And I think
it was life-changing, right?
It helped me with a lot of things.
It's super good, like journaling. I'm reading now The Artist Way by Julian Cameron.
Yep.
And one of the things she encouraged is writing 3 pages every morning.
That's first the thing in pages, the morning. And that's the exact protocol that I followed.
Yeah, and that now, since when I started with the pain and everything, I decided to start reading that and doing it, and it's super good because you dump everything you have in your mind first thing in the morning onto the pages. You write it down, and then it's gone. Like, it's there. It's, and you're not allowed to read them, to read back, which is, like, good as well. Like, I journal every night since... My life is written since 2017. I have every single day written, but this is different because it helps with, for me, it helps more with my mental health and to stay humble and on the right track, because we tend to worry about things that they are out of our control quite a lot as human beings, and it's just focusing on what you can do for yourself.
Yeah.
Very much so. And one of the things I noticed it helped me with was, if an issue came up during the day that I just didn't have the time or energy to deal with at the moment, I'd say, "I'll write about this tomorrow morning."
Yeah.
And if I wrote about it, I'd have the time to process it. And if I didn't write about it, it meant that it wasn't worth worrying about in the first place.
Wow. Super light. Because Brian has been traveling a lot. And he loves to travel, and I'm sure, like, being in different countries and different places, living along the road in too many places has taught you a lot for life. Is there, I have two crucial ones, is how many places in the world you've been, or where you have not been, in which countries, and... If you can say, like, 3 highlights, experiences, or lessons you learned from traveling, can you share that?
So where haven't I been? I've not done Southeast Asia, and I haven't done the stands, like Kyrgyzstan, Pakistan. I haven't done nearly enough in Eastern Europe. I'd like to spend a lot more time in Europe. I'd love to go back to Africa. I've been to Chile in South America. I feel like I could spend at least 5 years traveling around South America. So I don't know if I'll ever get around to that.
Have you been to Argentina?
I've not been to Argentina.
No way.
So we have a reason now.
Yeah.
Let's go together.
Yeah. I would love a host. Yeah. And then there's parts in the States I've not yet been to. I've not been to Alaska. That was a calling for me for years and years that I never ended up getting there. I turned down a job there just because other things were calling for me. I didn't think it was best for me at the moment to move to Alaska. There's the United States is an enormous country. In Canada, there's beautiful outdoors places in Canada that I would love to get to. Quite honestly, I'm quite content with being based in New Plymouth at the moment. I don't feel like I need to go anywhere. There's so much to do here, and I really want to build a community and invest in the community. People make a place, and that's one of the things I've learned is that people make a place, and you can travel and have all these incredible experiences, but there's something about having a community of people around you to share things with. It's so important.
Super.
Yeah. And I think this is what New Plymouth is giving, right, to us.
Definitely. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a lot of very special people here doing very special things.
So when you talk about New Plymouth, what is something that, or an experience or something that said, okay, I want to stay here, or a moment?
I don't know if there's any single moment or thing. I think it's just kind of the everything that the place has to offer. The manga, the coast, the surf, the disc golf community, the arts and culture, the improv community, all of it together just makes this such a special place.
Yeah. Okay. Like, have you lived in other places in New Zealand? You've been in Palmerston North and somewhere else?
Just Palmerston North.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, and I've been in Wellington, Auckland, and Waiheke Island, and Christchurch, and yes, New Plymouth has the different, it's different. It's different, and the weather is much better.
There is that
and
also.
It's sunny.
The sunshine.
And it's sunny.
It's certainly better than Palmerston North.
Yeah.
I love Palmerston North. That it holds a special place in my heart. When I go back there, it does feel like a bit of a homecoming.
Yeah.
It's a good place to do a PhD because there's a limited number of distractions.
Yeah, okay, good.
So you need to study or study.
Know, right? Yeah. For me, like, I came in New Plymouth. I stayed in New Plymouth, so I don't know, besides traveling, other places, but I always like to come back here.
Yeah, the thing is, like, when you travel is different when you live, when you settle in places. Like, living in a place and traveling is different. But when you travel, you can experience a taste of different cultures and different things. But when you live there, you start wondering about or looking forward different things, like, I don't know, everything around, activities you can do, people you can meet, and everything. And I feel like, from my experience in New Zealand, New Plymouth is a place I love to live because you walk across the street and you see the mountain and it's beautiful, and then you go to the beach and then the people is great. I don't know, I fall in love 1 year ago.
Yes, it's like my mother-in-law, she was just coming for Christmas, before Christmas, and she said, oh, I will come and I will stay for 6 weeks, and then she was going back to Germany, and after she left she was so excited, so she told all her village about New Plymouth. Because she traveled also around New Zealand, but she loved it here so much that next year she wants to come back again. And she said, oh, I will never travel afterwards. But now she's, like, amazed about people especially.
Getting to share New Plymouth with visitors, it's such a special thing because there's so many great things. And it's so easy to share.
Yeah.
And it's not as busy. It's not as hustle and bustle. It's just the traffic's not bad. Like, it's easier to do things.
Yeah.
I guess.
Yeah, we have the festivals, right? Now we have the festival coming tomorrow, Tematatini and WOMAD coming.
But the multi-ethnic festival.
And
festival
everything.
Of Lights.
Festival of Lights, yeah. Always something going on.
Yeah, You feel like you are in a capital sometimes. You know, like when I was going to this weekend to America, and I was thinking, oh, where I am? I'm not in New Plymouth. It's some like a metropolis. Or
it was
something.
A lot of people.
Yeah, it feels like it's sometimes it's so many, but in the same time, you have privacy. Yeah. So because we are at the end of our show, was quite a beautiful to spend time with you and talk about your adventures around the world. We have this last question for our guest. What would you recommend to people who come to New Zealand? What should they do in order to feel themselves at home?
How do you make yourself at home?
I touched on it. People make a place. Find your tribe. Find the people that make you happy and share experiences with.
Yeah.
Okay. So you encourage them to go to improvisation, right?
If that's their thing, certainly. If you want to release your inner child and find somewhere to play, it's a good place to do it.
And obviously sport.
Or the disc golf course. That's also a very fun place to be.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a good balance, indoor-outdoor activities.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Cool. Adding to that, I want to say, yeah, I agree as well. And I want to thank Alina for having me in the radio in the last episodes. I'm not going to be here in the next weeks, but let's see what happens in the future.
Yeah.
Brian, it's been great to have you today. I'm sure we can do part two for you to telling us all the crazy stories you have in random places. I'm pretty sure you have many.
We were just scratching the surface of thanks for the opportunity to be here, and thanks for putting the show on. It's really a wonderful thing that you're doing here.
Thank you And for everybody who's listening, if you want to know more about Brian or his story, or you know, if you want to do some sports with a disc,
meet me down at Maryland's Domain. I'll be
there.
Yeah,
Maryland's Domain. He's always there, and also improvisation. It's a great place for people to start meeting others.
And I think, just do whatever you feel you want to do. Life is too short. Enjoy it.
Yes,
very
it
true.
Is, right?
Very, very true.
So we're going to leave you to the last song that Brian gave to us, and then to the outro. So that is us for today.
Thank you so much. See you next Monday, same time, same place, 11 a.m. at Access Radio Taranaki.
See ya. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to this episode. For more information and others just like this, head along to our website, accessradiotaranaki.com.
This show was made at Access Radio Taranaki with help from New Zealand On Air. To find more local content, go to our website, accessradiotaranaki.com.